How can Jesus help us address the issues in Daniel 8? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas and Paul Dibdahl. All right, Daniel 8, and there are now two sacred beasts, the ram and the he-goat. And we're talking about the pollution of the sanctuary. That's the basic framework. And there's a battle between the ram and the he-goat. They come at the sanctuary, and the sanctuary is polluted. And Daniel asks, what's going on here? Key verse is chapter 23. Well, he said, unto 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be cleansed. That's the traditional language there. And as Daniel listens to the explanation, the angel says, this passage is for the time of the end. Okay? So whatever happens here happens to the time of the end. Now, there are several different features in biblical studies that can haunt us here. Typically, the Reformation heritage doesn't like to think of multiple applications or multiple interpretations. Historicism, which is based on Daniel 2, the image where you have one kingdom after the other, it loves to draw a line of history and has a single point there until you get to the time of the end. That's the classic historicist pattern. But I believe, and we'll look at some of those reasons here, that especially in Daniel 8, there is reason to think about people looking at that in different ways depending on when they're living. Okay? So that's a bit of a synopsis. The crucial issues here, context, who is it that pollutes the sanctuary? It's also the experiential difficulty of perfectionism. How is that going to be involved here? Biblical interpretation. So those are some of the issues that are involved. Now, I want to come back to that question that I posed at the first. As followers of Jesus, what's the best way to approach those issues? Should we throw stones at our enemies? Should we try to get a both-and approach?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by those issues, Alden. You mean the issues of how you interpret...
Issues of Daniel 8. It has been very controverted. What is the sanctuary? Now, let me just give you a sequence here of the way I think if you were Daniel and the sanctuary had been polluted by whomever, what sanctuary was Daniel thinking about?
Oh, the one in Jerusalem.
Yeah, it had been polluted in 586. Mm-hmm. Okay. Clearly, he's thinking about that, and when the angel says 2,300 days, then the sanctuary will be restored, there's some evidence that Daniel was thinking that that is a huge extension of the time frame, because he was sick certain days.
Yeah. In fact, that's a fascinating piece there, if I can just jump in, Alden, because it's remarkable that in the book of Daniel, when Daniel gets these revelations and they all are indicating now that the chronological sequence he had in mind is going to be extended significantly, that he's sick in bed.
Yeah.
You know, and in my mind, it would raise in his mind the question of what do you do when God is not doing what he's supposed to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
See? And for that reason, I love the ending, the last verse in the book of Daniel, because God finally says to Daniel, listen, you're going to die, and you're going to rest with your ancestors, but in the last days, in other words, God is very kind to him and says, I've told you this, you don't fully understand it, but don't worry, it's not going to jeopardize your place in the kingdom.
Okay, now let me take you through that one, because if Daniel, looking at it from Daniel's perspective, the only sanctuary he could think about was the one polluted by the Babylonians in 586. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now let's fast forward, and you come to the intertestamental period, when you have Antiochus Epiphanes, and we've mentioned to him before, he comes in, pollutes the sanctuary, offers pig on the altar of, to Zeus. And the book of Second Maccabees, which is from the intertestamental period, cannot resist the temptation to use all the language of Daniel to apply to that particular pollution. Mm-hmm. In fact, within Adventist circles, Mervyn Maxwell actually says it's probably that the disciples thought that the pollution of the sanctuary was a reference to Antiochus Epiphanes. He actually makes that comment. See? Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that as you look at the language, what happens at that point? Well, they were thinking about the book of Daniel, and they were thinking about Antiochus Epiphanes. But then you fast forward to Jesus, and in the Gospels, there's a very interesting comment. He says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, then let the reader understand.
So he's looking for a future event.
He's looking for a future event.
Destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, is that?
AD 70.
Yeah.
Now, you see, most secular scholars would see the whole book was just simply written at the time of Antiochus Epiphanes. But if you take Scripture seriously, clearly neither 586 nor 165 when Antiochus came, that doesn't do it, because you've still got Jesus saying, when you see that in the future taking place, okay? Now, come to AD 70, the temple is gone, wiped out by the Romans. But if you come back to Daniel 8, it still says, this is for the time of the end. See, so wherever you come back, it still says this is for the time of the end. Well, when is the time of the end? Adventists and other reformers think the time of the end began 1798, just to put a date on it. And when you come to the reading of Daniel 8, all earthly sanctuaries are gone. This is for the time of the end. You have basically two choices. One by our dispensationalist friends, who want to rebuild the sanctuary.
And have another actual one.
And have another actual one. And that way it can be in the time of the end. Or you can have the Adventist option of saying, no, all action now moves to the heavenly sanctuary, where you see the great controversy between good and evil. And given the choices between rebuilding the temple on the side of the Muslim mosque and having the heavenly sanctuary, I think I would opt for the heavenly sanctuary.
That's a nice explanation, Alden.
Now, there's one other illustration that if we're going to talk about multiple applications, because that really, because you see, you can lay this out, 586, 165, 70, and so on.
In other words, what you're saying, Alden, is that this thing becomes an experience that has... It produces basically the same meaning, but in different circumstances. Good. That's what you mean by multiple.
It seems to me like any time through history when God's people are oppressed, it seems to me that they ought to turn to Daniel and take comfort in statements that suggest that there will come a day when things will be restored again.
And the beast will be judged.
That's right.
And the sanctuary will be restored.
I seems to me I'd be irresponsible if I didn't look back to Daniel and take comfort in those. You could see how it's happened throughout history, that the tide of evil seems to win the day, and then there is a time when that ends. That should bring us comfort.
But this is not far removed from the idea that there is actually going to be a day in history when this is finally done.
There is a final end to it.
Yeah, yeah.
But what happens is the beast, for example, becomes types of enemies of God, and where that shoe fits, you can wear it.
Put it on.
It would be like the king of Tyre standing in for Lucifer, or the king of Babylon. It's the same kind of typology.
Yeah. And so... but you see, if you're used to having just one application, then you need some powerful illustrations. And I happen to think that the sanctuary here is one powerful, but there's another one, which is as good, if not better. That's the dark day in Joel. Mm-hmm. Now, if you read the dark day in Joel, it's clearly a grasshopper plague in Joel's day. And if you broaden your search out through the rest of the Old Testament, a dark day, falling of the stars, earthquakes, these are always signs of an imminent, soon-to-be day of judgment.
Judgment.
A local judgment, see. But then, just as we talked about types, this type then becomes a pointer forward to the ultimate one, okay? So here you have, and the reason why this is important in this discussion, is that the strict historicist would say the great earthquake, that's the Lisbon earthquake.
Lisbon earthquake.
1755. The dark day, 1780. Falling of the stars, 1833. They give a one-time event.
And those are now far removed from...
Yeah. I remember asking...
You need a good word, Alden, harbinger.
Harbinger.
You need a word.
These become harbingers. Maybe I'll even have to start using that word. But I remember once teaching this in a Daniel class. And when we talked about the earthquake, I just asked them, how many of your lives have been shaped by the Lisbon earthquake? not a hand. And I said, which earthquake did shape your lives? And a chorus of voices said, the San Francisco earthquake. And I said, where did you live? San Francisco. See, and so these signs have a real value in that sense. I think that we need to recognize that so that we don't have to just lock into one event. We can go either or. Antiochus can be a type of those who pollute the sanctuary.
Either or both and?
Both and.
Yeah.
Yeah, both and.
Yeah, and I think both and is correct. It's not the exclusion of one or the other, but the addition of other possibilities. So.
And there's one phrase, Dave, you and I have talked about this. I've used the phrase applied historicism, so that you take the beast, whoever it may be, but don't limit it to that, and you can use it elsewhere. That way you don't lose the value of the historical figure of whatever has happened there, but you can also look at other areas. Yeah. Book of Revelation seems to do that. Book of Revelation never mentions Rome. Even though as you read the Book of Revelation, understand the background, the beast there was clearly pagan Rome. What does the beast, what name does the Book of Revelation use? Babylon.
Yeah.
Babylon long since gone, but he becomes a type then, which can be reapplied.
So we have to reawaken the old type, anti-type language that used to get us all confused.
Sure, and that's a terrible phrase. I wish there were another way of doing that. But I think to see this as an applied historicism can really be very helpful. Now, next week, we are going to go to the prophetic message in Revelation 14. And that ties in. There's just all kinds of stuff that we didn't have a chance to address here in terms of Daniel 8 and 9. But it also ties in with the three angels' messages in Revelation 14, which is part of the same story, the same awakening that happened in terms of Adventist circles. But we'll have to do that next week. My thanks to Paul and to Dave for your participation and your help. And my thanks to Chad Ochterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the good work, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.